saying like folk songs.
Like Arlo Guthrie?
Yeah.
But I don't, yeah, I mean, I guess he's kind of, yeah, poppier than Arlo Guthrie. Yeah.
Ray Lamontagne. L-A-M-O-N-T-G-N.
I always say Lamontagne, but I don't think. You're going to go to Juliet at the end.
How was yesterday?
Okay.
Eating. I don't have to meet.
Call here tomorrow.
Oh. You? Oh, yes.
Well, maybe not in front of Father.
Oh.
I can't be a sailor in front of
Father. Oh, this is not good.
Where is everybody? Everybody pop things at 1:30.
So we have to keep our comments really long.
I'll give it about a few more minutes. That's probably.
Yeah,
I think we're going to be right here.
Yes.
Where's the meeting? Oh, this one is going to be right here.
I think it's scheduled for a while.
Very good. Was it Kohler and CC?
Good to see you as well.
So that's probably what happened with a lot of people. Cause the news paper posted it to me at 1:30.
South
Africa. Huh?
Oh,
your former staff at WJCT in Jacksonville today said it was at 1:30, and I was like, oh, come on.
Today?
Yeah.
No, they're missing four.
They're missing four.
Yeah.
So you got all things set up right there.
Okay. I got it all set up. That's what I need. Come on.
You're on it.
When I say I'm going to do something, I'll do it.
You're definitely on it. Definitely
ready. I got a process in place. We got Noel's going to help us with the distribution of the stickers.
Yes. Oh, that's the group meeting.
Yes.
I will be late, so put access to health care in the end.
Okay.
I'm coming from the WGA.
You going to the fair kickoff? Fair kickoff. What is that?
What time is that?
It's just down the street.
I don't know. I don't think I'll go. Huh? You going?
Just came back from Randy's. I knew you were there.
I was there. Yeah, I got there a little early.
So I just came back.
Yeah, we would know already.
But that's what I was like.
I was still in the process.
We'll give him about 4 more minutes.
Company
hours. We're going to start in about 5 minutes. It was a misunderstanding. A newspaper published that it starts at 1:30, so I know a lot of people probably, you know, on their way here, so we're going to start at 1:05. I must apologize. I'm going to blame it on Paul. I'm just joking.
No offense, Dick.
Hey, Jennifer, thanks. I'll talk to you.
I will gladly accept your $25.
It would start at 105.
You should start charging.
Again, just make a donation, volunteer some medicine, we can sweep it under the rug. Or Humanic, sponsor a woman with heart of it. That would be good. I tell them to be a sponsor. Anne Marie's here.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're
good.
You're
good. I think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, to be
a sponsor.
I agree.
You out there helping the people?
I was.
I saw you.
I don't think about what I was.
I saw Oh, yeah, I left it to the president.
She's got it.
Yeah. I knew. Whatever it was a new one.
It sounded scratchy, so I didn't want that to happen.
She's good.
It's good.
She's not messing around.
Yes,
All right, it's 1:05, so we're going to get started. I want to welcome everyone to the Special Committee on Critical Quality of Life Issues, SS to Healthcare Work Group. We're going to start with an introduction. We're going to start with the side down there, and then we'll work our way up.
I'm Tamron Bacon, Northeast Florida Regional Council.
Hi, and I'm Beth Payne with the Regional Council.
We can't hear you. Can you say it again?
Mic wasn't on yet. You need to know you're here.
Pam Wilcox, ECA. It's a council member newbie.
That's Pam Wilcox, ECA. It's a council member newbie, just in case you couldn't hear. Michael Boylan, District 6, Chair of the Critical Quality of Life Issues Committee.
And Paul Sapia, Population Health Principal for Humana.
Sam Newby, Jacksonville City Council.
I am Jennifer Ryan. I'm the CEO of Volunteers in Medicine and co-chair of the committee.
Anne-Marie Knight, UF Health Jacksonville.
All right, we're going to get started. I think we're going to have a good, fun time today. And once again, we need y'all feedback. We need for y'all to tell us how we can move to the next level. So now we're going to have an overview by Jennifer and Paul.
I will be very brief because I know we all are excited to hear from our speakers. But this is our third meeting of this committee, and today we're hearing some more best practices, and then we will be doing a very fun interactive SWOT analysis, not a SWAT analysis. I don't know, I always think of what it's A instead of O, but we're going to do a fun and interactive, really to hear from all of you and make sure we're getting everything down that we need to work on and that we can then share with City Council at a meeting next week where we'll be bringing kind of a status update of where we are so far to that group to get their feedback. So thank you for being here. Should be a great day.
All right. Thank you again for being here. Today is going to be the opportunity for you as the experts to really, you know, let your voice be heard and add some input into this. So I want you to be honest, and I want you to make sure you put down what you feel is important. I mean, this is a dedicated effort to make a difference in the community, and without everybody here, you know, we won't be able to make a real impact. So I want to make sure that everybody here feels free to do what they can to add and put their input in so we can make a decision. So thank you.
All right, now we're going to go to our guest speaker from UF Health, Ms. Anne-Marie Knight, and please ask her a bunch of questions.
She's really smart.
Thank you, Councilman.
So, yes, you can ask a bunch of questions because it's my pleasure to share that our Chief Financial Officer, Dean Cauchi, is with us, and Allison Martin, she's been with us all along as our leader over case management. So, why is UF standing in front of you? Well, we're standing in front of you. Remember that chart, our last center. We embrace the responsibility to manage the City of Jacksonville contract for City Contract. But other things I want you to make sure you remember about us is we are one of over 300 hospitals nationwide that serve as an essential hospital. And what that means is it includes the safety net responsibility we'll talk about in a little bit. We are your level one trauma center. And of course, we are your teaching institution. Here we go. So, thinking about access to care, we needed to be here. We needed to be clear about what our role is in the sea of all of the other things we do as an institution for the community. We want to be able to give you the adequate information that when you start your SWAT, you can factor in some of the work and contributions we make in the community. So you have, as you know, three entities. So we have our hospitals, we have our clinics, and of course we have academic medicine supports, which includes research. We are probably the only institution in the city that in our mission statement, we included the statement that we want to eliminate health disparities. We embrace our role of responsibility. It's important to kind of give you the landscape, and I realize that we are talking access to care, but wanted to make sure that you understand our entire footprint. So we have two hospitals, over 60 primary and specialty care clinics, over 100 specialties, and over 695 beds across our institution. The map just shows you the geography of our footprint. And as I look at a couple of our colleagues from other hospitals, we could clearly just superimpose other hospitals just to show you the magnitude of the footprint of healthcare in Jacksonville. So now I'm going to take the cheat. I'm going to ask Dean to come up and give you a little bit about the data around finance. Dean?
Sure. Thank you. Good afternoon, all. So just going to pick up where Emery left off here with our city membership contract. This is our fiscal year 2022. We're a 630 provider. So on the left, you can see the demographic mix. We've got categorized here three city contract, which are homeless. We've got city contract with residents. And then the prisoner jail population. And you can see clearly that 88% of the representative sample in 2022 is the city contract with residential. On the right-hand side, you can see the fiscal year 2022 service mix. I will say this, that the top in red, it does preface that we're 50% of the unfunded or uninsured population that we treat at UF Health Jacksonville is the city care membership. So there is another 50% of unfunded or non-insured patient population that we take care of as well. But the service mix, you can see 55%, or I could say more than 70% is two areas that only we could provide for the community is in the form of inpatient care, observation, which is a lower acute in still in a bed, in a patient bed in the hospital, and then emergency care. You can see that 55, 12, and then 5%. Now, I understand that everybody here has been privy to our last 9 years of funding under this city contract. You can see that just coming here to bring a little bit more context to that as far as from my vantage point, or our vantage point. So you can see that the first 5 years, $26.3 million was the amount that was held constant. And then in 2020, which I have to pause and say thank you to the city council and to the current administration under Mayor Lenny Curry. Great relationship really has never been better with UF Health Jacksonville. But you can see how that dovetails into increase in funding. That first year of fiscal year 20 was a non-recurring $8 million increase from that level set of 26. Then it was $4 million was reinstated in 2021, which was a recurring amount, and then we went up to $35 and $40 for 2022 respectively. If you look back, though, over the last 22 years, you can see from fiscal year 02 to 2013, 12 years, it was at a flat rate of 23.7, and then of course we got the 6 years at the 26.3, and then you can see as we articulated already the 20 to 23 levels, most recently being $40 million. But I will say that the full picture, you got to look at the cost side of this. And the cost of care back in those years where it was 26.3, there was a big difference, if you will, between the cost of care in red and the actual funding. And you can see the good news is that in 2022, at the close of our fiscal year, we're within $11 million of that. So we're really the closest we've ever been historically. But nonetheless, we have a lot of years that we were deficit funding, I'll call it. So you can see that the accumulation from 15 to 2022 on this chart would be a $205 million deficit funding. And honestly, if you go back to the 22-year period, that 02, it's actually $515 million. So, you know, we've operated in that space, but like I said, we are very appreciative that we're closing that gap currently and providing our great mission going forward. And then finally, I want to say that also in that period, and everyone's heard of this over the COVID phenomenon that we've been dealing with over the last 4 years, you know, the labor pressures, you know, in that same time period when we have gotten relief and a better partnership with the city from the financial perspective, this actually is the FHA's tally of all of their members, about 200 hospitals, about 70% of the representation of the hospitals in Florida. You can see the increases over from 19, a pre-pandemic, to a 2022 period. You can see 328% increase, in that utilization of contract labor. The actual spending, 489%. And then the salaries for merit adjustments, 300. So just looking at what we've dealt with at UFL, 188% increase, 65% increase, 100% increase, because we had no market adjustments in that base period. Then you look a little bit further, you can see how the admissions over Florida has increased during that time, but only 3%. You look at UFL, we actually had a decrease in admissions overall, 6%, during the COVID period, the pandemic period. But you can see how 50% increase in our expenditures for overtime, and the incentive pay was 100%, as I said earlier. So a lot of things we've had to deal with on the financial landscape over the last 3 or 4 years, but once again, we're very appreciative of the assistance that we've gotten from the City of Jackson. Okay, I'll turn it back over to Anne Marie. Finish up.
Thank you, Dean. So the reason we did that is just to kind of frame where we are, right? As these state teams, we rely on the dollars from the City of Jackson to apply here. We also have
Ms. Marie, can the chairman wanted to ask a question?
I do have a question to the CFO.
Sorry.
I apologize for interrupting. But the deficit, you talk about in indigent care, but isn't the state city money pooled with state funds to make up the difference? So you're probably doing better. You're not in a deficit situation with respect to indigent care, are you?
Well, in total, we are still at a deficit,
okay.
But it's not as – those were just city contract numbers.
Right.
What you're talking about is the dollars that we put up to the
state.
Yeah,
it's pooled and comes back, and it's pulled back down.
Yeah, for the low-income pool. So that helps us with the shortfall in Medicaid and the other indigent population.
Which speaks to the importance of the city contribution because it increases your amount of the pool that you get shared. But at the same time, it does help your situation in terms of balancing your indigent care budget, correct?
No doubt.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we just wanted to kind of frame the whole safety net mission. And the dollars were important to share. So if you notice, if you were here last time, you saw those little icons on the left. And I borrowed them from our sisters over at Jack's Care Connect. And really, I did that for twofold, to say they are doing yeoman's work around primary care and supporting patients, getting even specialty care. Right. So we're in this lane with them together. But clearly, as Dean shared, there's things that we do as a hospital that they have to come to us, so everyone has to come to us for more. So when you think about the SHADS card, so this is the piece, not the homeless, not our neighbors that are incarcerated, it's the layperson who comes and applies. This, I wanted to give you a little bit of a visual of what that process looks like. They have one-on-one application process at our Financial Eligibility Center. It is not an easy application for a layperson, so if someone has to sit alongside with them. And as you heard in the last session, Jack's Care Connect actually helps us by walking through the application with residents who may qualify. So those are the framing of the qualifications, 200% or below, the federal poverty guideline, excuse me. There are six tiers. So there's one tier that all care is free, and then there's some varieties in there in between. But note the last Duval County residents only. There's some exceptions to that, but in general, it is Duval County residents only. We don't make that up as the rule. It's a partnership with the city that dictates who we can serve with the city contract. Let me give you a little visual of where our city contract patients, our SHADS cards patients reside. So if you were to look at basically northwest of our hospital campus, 30% of the patients come from that community. Outside of out east, in 32206 and Arlington, the majority of other patients, approximately 34% more, come from south of downtown. And then, as you see the lighter shade, we're a little bit all over everywhere else. So we aren't concentrated in one area. So I want to emphasize, 66% of the patients are basically split north of our campus and south of our campus. So who's coming? There are a lot of patient characteristics we could share today, right? I wanted to focus on the two most common One simple, easy demographics that we can all associate with is age and, of course, race. So if you look at the chart on your left, when you think about race, who's coming is actually almost 100%, 50-50, African-American and Caucasian enrolled in city contract. When you think about age, 74% of our patients are 45 years of age and older. So that's who walks in the door and meets criteria today. And this is based on visits and inpatient stays in our hospital. So what's so good about us doing this work? And I look right now to Allison. So Allison leads our case management team in the hospital, and then we have a whole other case management team in the clinic side. So Allison's team is really focusing on, and if I get it wrong, Allison, come up to the podium and correct me later, but she's really focusing on that patient who is inpatient, getting them back home. And sometimes, as you see by some of the things in white, it's not simply about just discharging with the meds and making sure the patient understands. It's really, oh, you say your power is off, but your medication has to be refrigerated. We have to figure this out before we discharge you. So Allison's team does fantastic work in helping our patients meet their needs so they can ensure that they don't come back to the hospital and it can be healthier. So that's our holistic care from the case management side. And those of you that know me, you knew this slide was coming. Then there's that other piece of the urban health lines, right? So city contract patients that have the SHANS card are enrolled to our total care clinic, three sites, Brentwood, E.G. Means, and down in the old VA clinic, for those of you that know that building. And so we have the captured population of patients who, in general, if they're uninsured, probably have other social factors that are impacting their well-being, right? So what we've created is several models. These are just what I call the eye candy, two particular projects. But really, we're focusing on what can we do to help them with their social needs. Make no mistakes, we're a hospital. So you see food pharmacy there. It is a mini grocery store. You may have seen it in the news. But it really is other partners making that happen. We have staff, it's really philanthropic dollars, that make the food, give us the food, renovate the space, and provide us with staff. But the idea around food pharmacy is that as Allison may have a patient who's diabetic and has been coming back and back to the hospital, they get back to their primary care provider, the provider talks to them, finds out they are food insecure. So we can't keep telling this person to eat better because they don't have access to a grocery store. So they get referred to the food pharmacy and they are now enrolled in our food pharmacy. We have about 240 patients. We have probably double that waiting because we don't have the capacity to take more. Our success rate today, diabetic patients who have diabetes. Our goal has been to improve their diabetes to acceptable levels, at least 50% of them. We're at 86%. For those that have hypertension, 50% goal, you know, aim low, shoot high. 50% goal, we're at 83%. So the food pharmacy is working. It has Cinderella slippers on December 31st, 2025. If you'd like to donate, let me know. The second piece of the social services hub, and really, we're playing quarterback. Go cautiously here because I don't know much about football, but we know that the quarterback takes the ball and punts it somewhere else, right? That's all I know. I don't know if I got it right. Hands on it? All right.
You didn't get it right.
Nothing's going to pass it. Okay. Well, that's exactly what the social services hub does. Right? So, what we have said is when patients cross the threshold of the social services hub, they are not a patient, they are a client. And so they have come to us because a physician or an extender, another provider, has determined that they have a social need that's impacting their health. It could be the housing. It could be that light bill. It could be the fact that they're financially insecure and they need some help around employment. We are a hospital. We facilitate it. We hand them off, whatever the right word is, to an agency partner. We have a plethora of agencies who have committed to us to be a partner in this work. We thought it was really important to give you this big landscape, right? To make sure you understand how much dollars we're talking about and how much it doesn't meet and who all is in the city contract. And then to really present to you, hopefully you've seen how we are a holistic model of care, providing support for the residents and neighbors in our community. So with that, I hope you have any more questions or
So, Anne-Marie or Allison, quick question. What platform do you use to refer members? So you discover they are food insecure, they're in need of rent or utilities or whatever. Do you have a platform that you're using, or is it something that you've built?
Yeah, so we're transitioning to Find Help, which was mentioned in previous. So we actually have our contract underway, and we're excited about that platform, and we know that that's already have proven success. But, you know, in absence of that, what I can say, and this is something to be proud of if you're old school, is that outside of a tool like Find Help, I can speak to maintaining some incredible partnerships through some really, you know, sitting on different committees. I think the pandemic highlighted that in kind of on steroids, how we can come together in an interdisciplinary fashion. So right now, in absence of that, we're doing kind of old-fashioned case management. And it works really well, but Find Help is going to give us the excitement of tracking that data, communicating, understanding what's helping. The other thing that I can say internally, we have utilized Epic to track some of our social determinants of health and then who we are referring to outside of that and then how that's working. So in absence of Find Help, we've been using flow sheets for those of you that are medical, which are kind of a place in the chart you can collect that kind of data so that we can at least, while we're waiting for a tool like Find Help, extract data of what feedback we're getting from the patients when we connect them to a resource, did it work, did it not, so that we can use that moving forward.
Perfect. Thanks.
I have a question. One of the things that you didn't talk about was how someone joins City Contract and the duration that they do qualify for it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
And I'm going to, you know, I'm not one of the persons that does the application, but as I mentioned, it's not easy. They have to have an address, so clearly on the one portion of the slide, you know, they have to have a home address. They have to be a citizen. There's some exceptions to that. They have to demonstrate, prove your income. Otherwise, Anne-Marie may just come and apply for City Contract and get benefits because she doesn't want to have insurance elsewhere. So we have to be good stewards of the city's dollars, bottom line. So there are particular financial, I'll call them hoops, they have to present in order to apply for City Contract. And the other piece is it's not a sign up and you're done, right? Every 6 months, an individual has to reapply. But that is not UF Health-driven requirement.
Okay, before we start, I have questions from the audience. We have Council President Terrence Freeman in the back. You want to have anything to say, sir? Okay, so the normal process, if you have any questions, come up to the mic. You have 30 seconds to answer the question. And Anne-Marie and her staff have 30 seconds to answer the question.
When we talk about healthcare in our community,
say your name and your.
Okay, Carnell, for address is on file. What I want to kind of like highlight on is three particular areas. Number one, I had some time to take a look at the tax code and everything of that nature. What is going to take for either the healthcare insurance agencies to better work with our hospital system to push for a piece of legislation in expanding the tax brackets on the federal level, where Health and Human Services gets the primary dollars that they need to be able to provide more health care services. Right now, we sit at top of 37%. And my ultimate goal is anybody that's making $3 million or more, there's a 40% for them. $5 million or more, 43%. Those dollars, I've reached out to President Biden's office about this, our congressional representative about this, and having these dollars go directly to health care.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver. That's your 30 seconds up. I don't think you can answer that question because that's on a different paper.
Right, so you opened with what is health insurance going to do, so I would punt that to Paul.
And I'll punt it to Dean. We are working, you know, as a team, right, is how do we work together to provide more access? You know, we have supported the food pharmacy. You know, we're looking at ways to increase access through understanding of preventative medicine and ways that we can reach into communities and meet people where they are. So I think that's an important part of this whole component. The federal and the policy stuff, that's a whole different challenge that probably we can't handle at this point.
Yeah, this committee can handle that. That'll be on the federal level. Thank you, Mr. Oliver.
Hi, Mary Pat Corrigan with Sulzbacher. I've got two questions. Anne-Marie, you mentioned with the city contract application that it's difficult or detailed. You didn't say the word difficult. And it renews every 6 months. It's my understanding that that is the city of Jackson requirements, not UofL's. When's the last time that's been evaluated to make it easier and maybe to have it a year time period?
Yeah, Dean and I have actually started talking about, you know, is there something that could be done with that restriction? But, of course, it's an ask of the city. It's not designed or controlled by us, so we're going to explore.
And then has it ever been considered to spend more of the city contract dollars with UF on specialty care and divert the primary care to Agape, Sulzbacher, Volunteers in Medicine, Mass, et cetera, and free up some specialty care, which is so desperately needed?
Right. No, from my understanding, I don't think that conversation has happened yet. I would say that our safety net primary care partners have really just more so built their strength in more recent days. So this is probably the sweet spot to really start having a conversation like that. At the end of the day, they have to have the capacity to take those 5,000 or 7,000 patients, right? So there's a lot of things that I think that will have to go into that equation to have a discussion around. But definitely we could absolutely have the discussion. And, of course, the CFO and the city would be the ones to kind of decide what that would look like.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Paul, you want to chime in? Okay.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I'm Doug Hanser, 7400 Hogan Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32216. This is my address, and I am representing the Jacksonville Transportation Authority Committee, better known as JTAC, and I am on the committee, I'm on the paratransit subcommittee that deals with persons who use paratransit and going to dialysis. What I would love to see is to be able to have someone from the hospitals and JTA connection meet with our committee to see if we can find better solutions for persons who use this transportation system in getting to their dialysis appointments. If there's a way we can get that, I would be more than glad to make myself available, and we got to get somebody to take my information down and pass it to whoever is in charge.
Sir, well, I wouldn't say that I'm in charge, but I'll make a commitment to you that I will help orchestrate that meeting and attend it with you.
Yeah, and I must tell a personal story. I told Jennifer and Paul this a couple years ago. I kind of was the spokesperson for the dialysis clinic, and so I went and visited with one of them. And one lady, she had a 2:30. They pulled the picker up, but her dialysis went over. So the bus left her. And she had to wait another 4 hours before somebody came and picked her up. And I stayed there with her. And it was by me calling that it came in 4 hours. If I probably wouldn't have been there, the guy said it probably have been another 6 hours. And that was a couple of years ago. That was a couple of years ago when it happened. But I was really, you know, not happy that she had to sit there an extra 4 hours because her dialysis went a little bit over. So.
Definitely want to dig into that. And it's interesting timing because JTA just reached out to us to talk about some initiatives they're working on.
Right.
So we'll fold it in, but I'll definitely attend that meeting.
Mr. Chair, actually, after our first meeting, I brought it to the attention of JTA. There's an opportunity, and I know they're in the room today and part of the conversation, so they know that there's an opportunity for them. And I'm glad to hear they reached out to you as well.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Shannon Hoffman-Jikes. My address is on file. My question is just on the slides. There wasn't a lot of data that represents the disability community. and our access to health care. And I would like to know, is that data being captured, and can that be made available? And I guess my concerns with this, with the committee as a whole that we're discussing today, is what about accessibility? What about removing barriers to health care? I mean, where is that in the conversation? I mean, the Department of Justice came to Jacksonville, what was it, 5-6 years ago, and you guys settled a major lawsuit with access. I mean, is that something we need to revisit, or can we talk about that? And where's our representation in this room? Why is Kara Tucker not here? Why is Disabled Services not been invited to this conversation? I mean, access to health care is not just the social economical. I can't get through the door and I have health care. Can we talk about that? Can we talk about the numbers that are represented in the emergency room? How does that factor into people with disabilities? Are we uninsured? I bet you that we are in those cases. But even if we weren't, we can't access. So what about what's talking about removing some barriers? That's what I'd like to chime in on.
Okay, before... I do want to say all city departments was invited, and this is open invite for anyone. So Carol Tuckle and anybody can come here, and they was definitely invited. So.
Well, I just spoke with her 30 minutes ago. She said that they were not invited, so they couldn't be here. And that's very sad to me because, I mean, that's a department in the city of Jacksonville. Why are we not being represented?
Well, that's not true, and I have a conversation with her because that's absolutely not true. So,
And I think I've mentioned this. You know, if there's people that are not in the room that you feel need to be in the room, please invite them. Please, you know, send them the message. Access to healthcare is important. I know we have talked, since the meetings. There's a lot of things that go into this, and I think that this is something that we all have to share and come up with some ideas. But thank you for voicing your opinion and being a part of this.
Yep. And dealing with people with disabilities.
Absolutely.
We can start with just that. Yeah. We have cars that drive themselves, but we don't have a Hoyer lift inside of a doctor's office.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Carnell. everything that everybody complains about is about a dollar. And on a local level, we don't have so much control. But when it comes down to these big insurance companies, they have a lot of teams of lobbyists. The city has a lobbying arm. University of Florida Health has a lobbying firm. Everybody needs to be on the same page. When I say on the same page, either somebody gets ran over or we come to a compromise on how we get health care to the people in this community. I'd rather sacrifice the insurance companies because they're one of the biggest roadblocks when it comes to health care on a local level. I remember Rick Scott veto a special taxing district for UF Health. That would have been dedicated functions of dollars where the health care could have been more meaningful. We still have the opportunity to create a taxing district where we can get more primary care so that everybody doesn't have to overflow into one of the biggest emergency trauma rooms in our region. This county hospital just not only helps out people in this community. They help out those rural parts where they have lost hospitals. And one of the things when I talk to people that I know work in healthcare, one of the biggest obstacles is the insurance company. Either they get in line with what we need them to do, or you're going to see one of the biggest pushes in the next 2 years to get y'all out of the game.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver. Time is up.
Hey, I'm Paul Marputer with JTA. I just wanted to
say real quick that we are interested in getting some time on your agenda at some point to let you know what services we have to offer and what we're currently doing and what we can do.
Okay. Also, I wanted to, your name slips me. Don Lockhart.
I know you want to say
similar. Right, I do. She's here from the administration because I want to reiterate the administration was definitely included in this, so we didn't leave no one out. So I just wanted to state that. I don't know why Kara Tucker didn't come, but the administration was invited.
Yeah, I'll certainly reach out to her, and of course, Dr. Moreland made the presentation.
Right, of course.
The committee with the information that.
So I just want to put it on the record. The administration was definitely invited. Okay.
Hello, this is Jose Morales. I'm 5201 Atlantic Boulevard, also representing San Quentin's Jacksonville, and I'm the chair of the Mayor's Stability Council. I will say, just to go on what others have said, I do want the discussion to also be in attention to the access and the access part. There's a lot of people, members in the community, don't know the information of a lot of the services that the city offers or will offer. And access is also part of, you know, getting the information out there to everybody who needs it, especially the disability community, and also creating just physical access to. We have a health subcommittee, and I invite anybody who would want to join us in just creating more access and more general information to our public. So that's it.
Thank you. All right, thank you. I see we have Council Vice President here. You want to say a couple words, Dr. Sill?
This didn't work. Let me try this one.
Go ahead. It's good. It's good.
Is it working?
This one is.
Yeah. No, I think it's working. Thank you, Councilmember Newby. I'm really just here to listen, though. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Don't you know, Vice President, microphones normally don't work. It won't work until next year.
Hopefully.
All right, I think that's all the questions. So now we're going to go to best practices with Jennifer.
I want to introduce you all to Nicole Hamm. She is the executive director of the Blue Zones Project. Hopefully we've all heard and been a part of the conversations of how Blue Zones has been brought to the community. So Nicole is one of the first staff members hired, and she's building a team. But we invited her here to talk about what Blue Zones is going to do in Jacksonville, a little bit about what it is. So, Nicole, thank you for being here.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Jen. Like Jennifer said, my name is Nicole Hamm, and I am the executive director for Blue Zones Project Jacksonville. I'd like to say that I am a proud Jacksonville native. I went through Duval County Public Schools. I was raised in the Brentwood area, and I eventually went off to college at Howard University before returning and just getting deeply involved in the community and working towards things that we need the most, which is why I'm really excited to be a part of this project and where it's going forward. So Blue Zones is our organization, and our mission is to empower everyone everywhere to live longer and better. Emphasis on the better, because living long is just not enough. You want to live well. You want to be able to enjoy the life that you get to live. So we kind of take this this alternate approach of looking at the opportunities within our culture and our environment that empower us and nudge us to make the healthy choice, the easy choice, and the more natural choice, which in turn gives us a healthy, longer-lasting, more purposeful life. So Blue Zone started as just a scientific social experiment. Our founder, Dan Buettner, kind of was like, hey, what's going on with these pockets of the world where people are living on average to about 102? Like, what's in the water? What's, you know, where's the fountain of youth that these people are getting to live so well? So he got with National Geographic and got sent on an exploration to really kind of identify and figure out what were these cultures and communities doing that allowed them to live so well. So what we found were there were five longevity hotspots. As you can see, most of them are overseas, but there is one domestically. But he traveled to each one of these hotspots and really took an immersive approach into the culture and into communities and connecting with the older communities and those that were living a very long time to figure out what these commonalities were and to distill them amongst these different regions, socioeconomic, and environmental factors of why they are all living so long and living well. These people were jumping up and down, they were walking miles a day, doing all of the things that most people were doing, and they were doing it at an impressive age that was just a little bit older. So we found nine commonalities that we aptly named the Power Nine. So it's broken down into four subsections, but all nine are extremely powerful, and they work together across sector to create impact. So the first is movement. I've often heard from my orthopedic surgeon that movement is medicine, right? Just even moving naturally. These people were not going to deadlift 220 pounds a day, three times a week at the gym. They were just nudged into movement by their environment. Similar to your Apple Watch that tells you to get up and move every couple of hours, that's what these people naturally had, that nudge of movement every 20 minutes, whether that was through work or whether that was through getting to the store or getting to see their friends. They were walking and moving naturally. Having the right outlook. Each one of these communities knew what their purpose was. This moment the feet hit the ground in the morning, they knew what they were there for and what they were contributing to their family and or community. And also the taking time to make rest a priority and not just an option. So there's cultures and spirituality where you rest one day a week. There were people that just simply turned everything off at 4 p.m. and just didn't do anything. And then, just people that found different ways of what that looks like for them, whether that be through yoga, meditation, etc. And then they only ate till they were 80% full rather than filling their stomachs up and also taking a timed approach to their eating. So as someone that eats with their eyes and not with how they actually feel, I will order like 8 things on the menu and I never get to it all and I don't pace myself because it all looks so good and I want to try it. These communities and cultures really took a step-by-step approach where they would eat their appetizer, wait, sit, have conversation, move into the main course, have more conversation, move into tea, and then evaluate if they were even going to do something afterwards. They were also predominantly plant-based diets. Meat and dairy were definitely in some of the diets, but it wasn't their main source into their meal, which is extremely important. And most of these communities were rural, so they kind of knew where their meat was coming from. They raised the chicken or the cattle or the pig rather than going to the store, or if they were going to a market, it was a market of a neighbor that also raised the meat and products themselves. Wine at 5, which is everyone's favorite, or tends to be most people's favorite, but emphasis on that this is a social construct, not just, going out on a Saturday night with your friends and saving all of those wines up for the weekend, but one or two glasses of wine socially has definitely made a big difference, especially red, which is what most of these communities are drinking, which I don't have the health statistics on, but I've heard is good for your heart health. Having the right people around you and that accountability. When you are in an environment of people that push you and nudge you to be better, I have a friend that makes me run on Sundays, and every morning I hate the texts I receive, but I'm grateful that she is pushing me and nudging me into that type of movement and that I have a friend such to do so. I'm really bringing those loved ones first. And we're starting to see that come back, and I think a little bit has to do with the housing market, but coming back into multi-generational housing, kids moving back in with their parents, older parents coming back in with their children, being around their grandchildren has really made a difference in some of these cultures and communities, and we're starting to see a little bit of that come back currently. And of course, having a sense of belonging. All of these people belong to a faith-based organization or practice that they believed in. You often hear it as being a part of something bigger than yourself. That's community, volunteerism, or just being together in that faith. So what does that look like? Blue Zone said, how do we reverse engineer to make all of these commonalities and characteristics a standard in a community, right? Which sounds like a really heavy lift, and it is, because I've been doing this for only 60 days and I'm exhausted. But we look at the life radius, so the 20 miles of where people live, work, and play, which is basically the essence of your environment. And so Blue Zones is taking an approach through people, places, and policy to create and implement that change. So the people part, really engaging the community to take ownership of their own health. We're looking to engage about 30,000 to 35,000 adults to take the Blue Zones pledge, which is saying that they are going to take these Blue Zones feedback and standards and characteristics and implement them into their own lives. A MOI, which is basically kind of like your girl group or your boy group, your group of people that hold you accountable and hold your feet to the fire. Finding those social constructs and or helping create them so that people can connect with other people. And purpose. If you don't know what your purpose, how can we support and help you find what that looks like so that every day you have something to look forward to and work towards. and places and just engaging all of those places where we spend our time, our restaurants, our grocery stores, our faith-based communities and schools. It can be as simple as connecting with grocery stores in the way that they shift their layout so that food and produce is at the forefront and we move all the candy and beer to the back. Or it can be as intensive as, you know, really trying to get a grocery store into a community that may be lacking without that walkability in that 20-mile radius. And policy, so wonderful city of Jacksonville is an integral partner, really working with how do we look on a systemic level of where we can make some nudges and create some change so that this is just sustainable work and that when the people already have the habits, they have the systems to complement that change as well. So this is, I love this slide because this is kind of our current model of health. And what we're looking at is there's usually a smaller population of people that are healthy or have very low risk factors, and then we have a big population that are right at the brink, right, like right over the edge, that if their social determinants of health change, they could really become burdened health-wise. And what Blue Zones does is we want to make the green spot, the healthy spot, bigger with, and have healthy behaviors and environments that reinforce those behaviors and therefore, you know, really creating a reduction in those that need that immediate medical care. I learned yesterday at the conference that there's high physician burnout. And what does that look like? That looks like really creating an environment where our physicians can focus on the major things that need their attention, and we can create environments to where those little things, such as food access and joint pain, can be greatly reduced by just shifting the environment that we live in. So the Blue Zones Project is hyper-focused on five main zip codes. 32206, 32208, 32209, 32210, and 32244. So north, east, and west Jacksonville. But we are a consolidated government. So these changes are going to be felt and rippled throughout the entire city, which I think is extremely important. And our approach is just looking at these communities specifically to say, if we brought this here, this would make a really high impact in these communities that really need it, and Arlington, San Marco, et cetera, get the benefit. Especially when it comes to our policy and our school system, one city, one government, one school system, we can definitely create change that even if it's focused in a specific area, all of our students are getting those type of opportunities in education, and everybody in our city is affected by those policies to create improvement. There's going to be a local team of 14, including myself, so we will be the on-the-ground experts to really kind of drive this work forward as far as implementation. However, we are supported by our national team of global experts that have the institutional knowledge that combine and connect us with our local knowledge to see what opportunities and recommendations are the best impact for the communities that we are working in. So this is kind of how we're looking at our transformation. And at the bottom of your screen, you'll see those global experts. So people that have experience on a federal level of grant writing, that are built environment experts, transportation experts, food system experts. We have the national organization and their team to support, kind of the day in and day out operational structure. Then we have our local team of 14. And then we have our community leadership as well as community volunteers. And again, this is a community-led and driven project. So everything that we are doing is hand-in-hand with the community, not on top or over. So we will have our steering committee, which is almost our governing body and our guiding light, would that consist of our sponsors as well as selected community members because we want that input. And then we'll have our leadership team, which is our local team. And then we'll also have working committees in each of these buckets so that we can really focus on what this work looks like from the specific policy perspective, the specific board site perspective, from the specific engagement perspective, et cetera. So we are currently in our foundation period. Oops, went too far. And our foundation period is a full 9 months. So we're in about October, so we're in about month five. So I have been hired, the steering committee has been put together. They had the kickoff in June with all of our partners in the city of Jacksonville. And what we're doing now is we're hiring staff, we're engaging community, we're building that trust so that when we kick off in March, that we have the footprint and the ability to move forward. In between that, and we've had multiple meetings with the city, transportation department, JTA, I think that's today, and other organizations, Karen Tucker and Senior Services, of just kind of like, what are the opportunities and what's the work that's being done now that we get an opportunity to help amplify? And that's not just limited to the city, but also nonprofit organizations and community organizations and coalitions as well. So what all of that distills down to is really creating a recommendation report and eventually a blueprint, which will be our blueprint going forward for the next 5 years. We have a third-party organization, Gallup, that you may have heard of for the Gallup poll and Gallup well-being. Gallup is going to do an initial well-being survey and see where we're at now so that we can create measurable and tangible metrics of the work that we want to do. And each year around this time, they will come in and do the same survey so that we are able to see where we're improving, where we may need to shift, and where we may need to just look at what does alignment look like, or if we're on the right track going forward, and is there something else that we could take on or something that we need to address going forward. So we're really kind of in this just discovery phase, getting our feet wet, really kind of laying the groundwork so that when we get that blueprint done, we have those 5 years to implement and actually execute. And again, these are just our pillars of how the blueprint will look. It'll be broken down into policy, people, and places with all of those things that we spoke about earlier distilled into those buckets. So why Blue Zones, right? Blue Zones because it works. and we are going to be the 73rd Blue Zones community in the nation. So we have seen this work in small communities, mid-sized communities, and even large ones. And overall, there has been a more than 5% increase in sustained well-being, along with some amazing additional metrics that you can see on your screen. My personal favorite to highlight is Albert Lea, Minnesota, that although is a smaller community, have made an incredible increase in their well-being, but also a huge jump in just residential optimism. And I think that's where we are now with Jacksonville. Everyone is so excited about where we're going and what we're doing that we have a unique opportunity to really create a structured environment that gives people such optimism that they want to stay well, they want to do well, and they want to create that pipeline of longevity to where their kids come home, their kids stay, et cetera. And I think it's just a unique opportunity. Fort Worth is probably one of the largest communities that Blue Zones has worked in, and that's kind of how Blue Zones got to Jacksonville. The former CEO of Baptist was from Fort Worth and kind of brought the idea of Blue Zones here. And as you can see, there was a 31% decrease in smoking and a 9-point increase in residents that exercise 30 minutes a day. And again, this is not going to the gym and lifting, you know, 50-pound weights. These are people just moving naturally throughout their day, whether that's taking a 15-minute walk at work, whether that's finding that social girl group to walk their dogs in the evening or in the morning of the day. They're just moving naturally. So these are all of our partners that we are lucky enough to work with. And as you can see, we have UF Health here, but the major medical partners are really involved in this. And sometimes they're often looked at as competitors, but in this case, they're really collaborators and coalition builders and help us guide what needs to be done from our scope of work and help us guide with integrity, their resources, and their time and support so that the local team can fully focus on doing what needs to be done for the community so we can better support and sustain their well-being going forward. So that is all that I have, and I'm happy to answer any questions. I hope I'm on time.
You were just a little bit over. We gave you a little bit of grace.
Sorry.
We gave you a little bit of grace.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hamm. Any question for Ms. Hamm? Come up, Mr. Oliver.
My focus is it's all about economics.
Mr. Oliver, this is question and answer. You need to ask her a question.
I'm going to ask her a question, but I'm going to make a statement first. This is by economics. Driving down the cost of people going to the hospital. So I have a 3-pronged approach. It's the policy specifics. I want to know exactly, have you had a chance to sit down with Brandy's white area? Because it's still rural. And maybe there could be a way where you can put farms out there in that area, establish more urban growing in our community where you can provide more fresh produce, maybe organic cattle, things of these nature,
Is that something that you could look at, number one? Is that something that you could look at?
Mr. Oliver, you have 30 seconds and you're up with 30 seconds. You can ask the question, Ms. Hale.
Okay, so when it comes to that specifically, our food systems experts are working directly with people that are already working in that space. So there is a co-op of farmers and growers, and we have met with them yesterday and asked them, what do you need? What does that look like? What does the support mean for you? And a lot of that is, like you said, economics, helping them have the tools and resources to buy the land. I don't know who owns the land out in Randy White's area. I'm not sure if it's city or private. So we can also empower those farmers and growers to be a part and get a business plan and acquire the land and do all of those things. But it would be up to them. You know, we can't force them to integrate into community, but all of them have that kind of mindset. But we can, again, just really help expand, help them look at grants, help them look at what this looks like long term.
But Ms. Ham, their questionnaire center is sitting on property.
That's not a question. You have any other questions for Ms. Ham?
I would like to encourage you to look at the city equestrian center, because it is one of those areas where they used to have back in the day a lot of agricultural events going on out there, and it's still going on. But that's sitting on property. It may be some opportunities out there in that area.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Ham? All right. Well, I'd like to thank both of the speakers. Let's give them a big hand. Now for the fun part, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Jennifer. She's been waiting for this all week.
So now we're going to do, we're going to get up and stand up and move around. We're going to do our SWOT analysis, and the way that it's going to work, all of you are at a row of tables with a number on them, and on the back wall, there are sheets of paper on the wall with a number that corresponds with your table. So you will start at that piece of paper. There are markers. We're going to give 1 minute, and then we'll rotate to the next sheet of paper. So what I would recommend is identify someone that would like to be a scribe and have a conversation about how you want to answer the questions. And then once we're done with that, we'll have one more exercise, and I will address the group after that. So feel free, if you want to move it around, just make it so people can see where it is. If you need to move tables or chairs, I will help to move them back if we need to. But I'll give everybody about a minute to kind of get to your sheets of paper, and then we will get started.
Okay.
And they do have those.
I've heard your name so much. Everybody's like, "Have you talked to Paul? Have you talked?" I said, "No, I haven't talked to Paul yet. I said, I just hired people. Now I can do a little bit more things because I can spread out my wings a bit."
Let's have some time.
I am not, because I want it to bite everybody else.
Incredible things that I've heard. And
well, I can't.
Like I said, we're really just
trying. Right. Yes, that's true.
I'm typing up the results. Okay, the 1 minute will start now. So start writing, brainstorming. Everything is wrong. All of the questions are around increasing access to health care.
Yes. Yes.
Well, if you want to put that in there too, I would love for it to be. Yes.
Yeah, we've got a lot of work to do.
I'm adding the
application.
But,
you know, I'm very optimistic about it.
There's a lot of things going on. Just imagine for a massive mapping to find out what's already
been done. That's really the bulk of what we've been doing these past couple of months.
Jennifer, tell me what you're doing.
We're doing a SWOT analysis by going around the room and answering the questions on the board. And then we're going to go around and stick them by stickers, pick 10 that they put them by what they think is the most important.
Access to care.
One 10-point sticky?
No, they have 10 stickers.
10 stickers.
So they can put them so on the board.
They can put all 10 on one? Or okay.
And that will tell us what the group
Gotcha.
Kind of the same thing we did.
Zones is really just, but the four put them all on one. Kind of
2-2-3 is.
Well, you're gonna get the ripples, you know?
Okay, time is up. So now you're gonna move clockwise. So if you're at 8, you're gonna go to 1. If you're at 4, you're gonna go to 5.
Yeah.
Okay, so now just move to your right. So if you're at 1, you go to 2. If you're at 3, you go to 4. 4, it's time to move to 5.
Sharon, what do you want to do?
I think if you're in that group, they're just bringing the paper. That's fine. Because that's accessible to the group. I will give some time. Someone hit a light button.
Electricity may be out.
There we go.
Oh, you're going to probably work
for it. Right now, what have we done so far successfully?
Give it up. All right. It's very interesting. We have time. So.
Randy's mother's service. I did run out there.
Yeah.
So, like,
I'm not dressed the way I want to be dressed, but
I broke my shorts.
Yeah. I ran out there so many times.
I did too. Glad to hear it.
Right. No, I understand. I understand. I wanted to send flowers and stuff, but I didn't worry about it.
Yeah, it was so quick. I mean,
apparently their son is in town for just 2 days because of some training. And
I can tell you, yeah, it, last 5 years.
Okay. Well, that's why I was called.
So, yeah. I think when you was calling me, I was there.
What do you think about this? We should be fine.
Okay, start wrapping up your discussion. And now make your way. If you're at 3, go to 4. 4, go to 5. 5, go to 6. And this group over here, replace your sheet. I'll wait till you've changed out the sheet. Good. I was wondering how we were going to do that. That's a perfect solution. Genius. As we go through this process, you might find some things you agree with. Instead of rewriting it, feel free to put a little star next to it to show that you agree.
I know DeFore will be there, and I know I was shocked.
Did you think just the things that
I gotta start adding buffer time for just talking.
Yes, you do.
I need to do that. We just hired an office manager that's going to manage my skills.
Exactly. If you go to the mid-50s,
I'm happy to let go. Like right now. Away. Out the door.
You're in a big role now. You're going to have to create your barriers.
I see. Just have to start putting holes on my calendar. Like, just don't.
Well, you're just perfect. You were here plenty of times. It's good. It all worked out.
Whatever the percentage is.
I don't know how you do it.
Okay.
The public hearing requirement.
25 seconds.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid. That's what Terrence said. This may be your problem.
Okay, it's time to move to your right. And replace the paper.
Yeah. 25 seconds. Okay, time to move to the next sheet. We are halfway through.
Jessica's
Yeah, not very coordinated.
Right, got a good words on that.
That one's definitely don't mark.
Okay. What disadvantages do we have?
It's because this has to be what?
Overall lack of loyal and retained staff, transportation, limited housing, healthcare staffing, retention, and training, uninsured adults, health literacy, Medicaid expansion, and lack of residence slots to train MDs. Downtown historically not vibrant, and taxing authority for healthcare. I think the size of the size of the county is spread out
geographically. Is that what you mean, Erica?
And then pick this other part.
I told her, I was like, it's so cold. It's so cold yesterday. No. Thank you.
I'm going to say coordinated care.
25 seconds.
She got me trembling up here. You gotta walk us through our post done.
Huh?
You gotta walk through the sheets.
We are not done with our exercise.
There's more.
And there's more.
There's a dance routine with Chris.
And I owe you a mea culpa too. I haven't followed up with Jake yet, but I will. Slip and stroll, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay.
January. We have time.
I thought that was easy.
Yeah, he knows. Okay, move one over to the right.
You guys are going all the way over. We're bringing our sheets to.
Gotcha.
One that way?
Yeah, so you're at one now.
What about what she said with a Hoyer lift? How might she describe that?
in general practice.
Are there extra sheets?
Yes. Our lovely planning staff can help.
Right.
Okay, so if you were on 8, 1 is over here. Okay, only 2 more. 2 more.
How did you send a tweet to her?
A
text to her?
Yeah, I just copied the text.
Oh, you just copied it.
Okay. 10 seconds. Okay, this is the last one, so you should be finishing at the sheet before you. Yeah, you're on 7. Yeah. So if you were on 8, you're now on 1.
That's a good problem.
I told you.
So I'm thinking we just pass them out now as people are already standing up.
Just to get to know him. I don't know.
But tell, yeah. And then I'll give instructions.
I have met him. He's approached me. He said he wanted
everybody
to meet us.
Everybody
should
have
10. So we just, I know, I was like, if I was really good, I would have cut it in 10. So just tell people to take 10. Just pass out the sheets to... Not yet, not yet, though. Not yet. 1:20. 1 minute and 20 seconds.
I've done last week. Pretty good shape.
You did. Who did it for you?
I have not just as
well.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, really? That's all? Okay.
They will be able to do it. We did in
So 50 seconds. Oh my God, you're like right next to me. Yeah. You're sure at the Vermont Center, yeah.
You know, on the
go to Indochine or something. I love Indochine.
I do the same thing every time.
Me too. I do too. And they're like, do you need a menu? I'm like, no.
I'm like,
it's
over pad
thai with
extra vegetables, level
3. Ooh,
3.
That's
kind of
like a hot.
Yeah,
3, that's hot.
It's like you see that every day. I mean, like when you're
10 seconds.
I used to work with a guy, like, and it's so hot that he'd be like, he's British, so he loved it super hot. And literally, the sweat poured on his face.
Okay, thank you all. So we have one more step in this process. So right now we're going to be handing out stickers. So I would like for everyone to take 10 stickers and go around and put them on what you think are most important.
Y'all figure out how to do it. I don't know how to do it.
So please take 10 stickers and you are going to place them on the sheets around the room on the 10 top things that you feel are most important.
Not all 10 on one sheet.
Please try to avoid putting all 10 on one sheet, but please go around, look at each of the sheets. And if you are unable to go around the sheets, maybe ask someone to place the stickers for you on topics that you are important to you. I apologize for the room setup, lack of access in the room. So take 10 stickers and place them next to the items that you think are most important. Just 10, please.
You're getting what I give you, babe.
Amber, I said you got 20 stickers. You can only have 10 stickers, not 20.
I don't like these colors.
Oh, I'm not sorry. I know.
Yeah, absolutely. Got your stickers?
Yep.
There you go, Tyler. That's a way to be creative. Just stick it on your hand.
I'll turn over to Paul. Discussion.
It's been a good meeting.
I wish it was more quickly.
Stop.
Yeah. And then when once we come up with a solution, they'll be all mad. But we're here to.
Do something I hope you don't like.
You don't like that?
I can't say anything. I can't say.
That's true.
I know it's low hanging fruit.
We kind of used what we had for the swab analysis.
Coming before the 20th?
Yeah.
Because I wanted to meet too, right?
Yeah. But I think we need to have our own ducks in a row before we talk to. Because I think we've got our.
It would be a good sense of each group to have a survey. Here's where we are, here's where we think we're going. And then I want to have a conversation about how best we collect and convey this. You got a group like this, and how do you get to some credible recommendations?
So, Jeff, you didn't know you was going to be the one presenting?
I mean, that's fine. If you want me to present, then I'll just put all of my own ideas on.
No, no.
I've got it all figured out.
I didn't say that once we did it all. Yeah, we do need to meet that way. But you're going to be the one to present.
I'm in Orlando Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday next week. Presenting. And Wednesday. So, if we find a time, I'll see what time might be.
He doesn't work tomorrow. We need to type up the SWOT analysis.
Maybe we can do some
kind
of. We can call him over.
Yeah, you can call me on the phone.
Okay. I was thinking ahead.
I'll let you know what time I might speak at the presentation.
Number five, what needs are not being met is really busy. And she.
I agree. I mean, in theory, she's have all the stickers, so. Just because she's a rule follower, then.
Please feel free to continue putting your stickers on, but I just want to share with you our next steps on this. We now know what our priorities for our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats are based on your input. So I will be putting all of this together to share with the group, hopefully by early next week, but it will also go to City Council. So we are through with the exercise. Thank you so much. And I'm going to turn it over to Councilman Newby.
All right. Can we have everyone to sit down for just 1 second?
It gets everybody in our desk.
We're still working.
You're fine. Okay. I just think there's some people that can go. Like, we can wrap it up.
Yeah, so now.
No. I love it. I know. So we can hang out and do what you want.
Right. Yeah, we can everybody sit down for just 1 second. Now we're going to turn it over to Paul for discussion, and then we'll be wrapping it up.
All right. Good afternoon. Thanks, guys. I appreciate everybody's input on these. As Jennifer said, we're going to take these thoughts that you wrote down on the paper, organize them, and come into some good potential recommendations for the group. I think we are presenting them not the 20th, but the following week, right? We present them back here or to the group, or is that on the 20th?
We can send the summary out.
Yeah, so we'll send the summary out to the group. As I've mentioned on every other meeting, if there's not somebody here that you think needs to be here, please send the email. Get them to come to the meeting and lend their voice to this. We're the lucky ones that get to coordinate this, but you're the experts in this, and they're really going to help us make a difference in access to healthcare in the city. So thank you for being here. Thank you for taking part in Jennifer's great exercise, and Councilman Newby.
Thank you. Any discussion, any comments? Yeah, we hadn't got the public comment yet, but this is any discussion on the SWOT analysis? All right, and I want to thank Jennifer once again. This was a great idea, and I think we got a lot of good feedback, so thank you once again. So we have two. The first one is Mr. Connor Oliver for public comments.
Yes. I guess this is one of those situations where you don't have much control this time, this public comment.
You have 3 minutes.
I'm talking. And you don't even see you interrupting my time.
Sir, I need you to stay, sir.
I'm talking. Can I make my point?
Sir,
thank you, sir.
Sir, sir.
The thing about it is.
Hold on 1 second. We're gonna have order in here, number one. We're gonna have order in here. So you have 3 minutes, sir, and I need for you to speak your name and address. Thank you.
Carnell, address is on file. One of the things that I'm gonna make perfectly clear. Like once I get like what I said, I know devil's in the details. The number one thing about all of these different points, 1 through 8, that I kind of get is about money. And the one thing that somebody kind of got pushed me to add my sticker to consistent things that actually can connect the dot to a lot of these issues. A lot of y'all are the professionals. Y'all are the technical people. But without Medicaid expansion, you will not see any of these problems be addressed. It's common sense. Either we get the voters to go out and vote and put somebody in the office that's going to expand Medicaid, these problems are going to continue to mount, and you're going to constantly be trying to look for grants through the Human Health Service Administration, or you're going to be trying to look for money coming from the state. It does not make no sense. Everybody should be on the same page with one goal, Medicaid expansion. That's the only way that you can fix this problem. And as much as y'all try to talk about this problem, all blown up, it's very simple, it's about a dollar. I'm not going to repeat myself continually, but I have one of the biggest headaches running as chairman on this group or committee. And I'm glad when you're gone. Bye.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver. With Troy Morris.
What's up, Tyler? Close. Tyler.
Tyler, I'm sorry.
Councilman and committee members, thank you for this time. Tyler Morris, 1816 Cherry Street, 32205. I am the executive director for SIL Jacksonville. I'm very pleased to see we have members from our disability group to represent the 130,000 constituents in Duval County with disabilities and to talk about the healthcare disparities. And I also like to see our partners too, Anne-Marie, Jessica here from Brooks. Jacksonville's a great place to live, and I like that we're pushing to that excellence for everyone, regardless of ability status, to make sure that we have that. For my community, for our community, access means interpreters, so you don't get notes to say that you have cancer. It gives you access to making sure that you get talked to as an adult, as a person with an intellectual and developmental disability, and you don't have to talk through a parent. And make sure that you can be seen in a hospital setting or a exam room rather than having an intake at the in the waiting room. So I want to continue us to push towards that excellence for our disability community and elevating that conversation. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comments? Mr. Chairman, you have anything to say? Mr. Vice?
No.
Thank Chairman? You. All right, I think it was a great meeting. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, we do want stickers back.
Not the ones on the sheets.
Not the one.
Guys, you're not kids. Get the stickers back. You're non arts and crafts. Not crafty
for the record. Yeah, right?
Plus, I wanted to get his contact because I don't know. Is he?
Do you guys, do you maybe want to take pictures?
I just thought it was really good to...
Can we take pictures of the sheets before they come down? Just in case?
Let's recommend working.
I'll tell you Monday.
We're still continuing conversations. I know there's been some.
I know. I'll wait for that slide of like, that slide of the $50. That's a dollar amount.
I told you when I got the shot. It's the off time.
It's going to be cool. It's going to be cool. Yes. Okay. That lady is already. I've been looking at
yes, yes. I will come upstairs. Thank you.
We're going through some challenges. Which committee are you
participating in?
I'm heading back to the beach.
Don't take that money.
Great job on your program. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Oh, yeah. Nice to meet you.
We like to let it sit
and marinate.
That was good. Thank you. Really was. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I've never heard of Blue Zones until.
And you can yourself.
July.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So I got a chance to meet you guys.
That's right. I remember you.
Not JT. Karen Tucker invited me.
Totally remember.
So something.
Remember, I'm all my boys.
No, I hear that picture. Not yet. Wait. Take it now.
Sorry. No, you're good. I'll see you later.
Yes. Yeah. He would have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on medical school. Yeah.
stop.